Okay, it is the 31st of March, and what I'd like to do tonight is go over your law firm's responses to this agreement that we worked on last week. And the way we're going to do this is each of you in turn will tell us about your clients, what business your client is in, what it wanted from this business arrangement, etc., and a little bit about how you prioritized your decisions, given the limits of time, as to on which sections of the agreement you would be focusing, and the proposals, the proposed changes that you chose to make. Again, this is all in the context of not a lot of time for all of the things that we discussed, and the idea here is really to see how you would think this one through and then take those thoughts and put them into language that ideally would be at least somewhat acceptable. Now, I wanted to just quickly show you, for those of you who may not have dealt with marking up documents, I just want to at least show you briefly the process of marking up a document. How it is that you can see, if you have two Microsoft Word documents, the changes between what you had originally and what you get. Now, I want to preface this by saying that a few things. One, it doesn't necessarily pick everything up. Two, it may show things as deletions that are actually just moves. And three, depending on how your practice is set up, you may have access ultimately to more sophisticated tools, dedicated comparison software that's smarter about things, clearer, more configurable. This actually was a nice addition to Microsoft Word because prior to its being added, the only way to do what I'm about to show you would be through dedicated, expensive, standalone software. So, hope you guys can all see this. We're typical. This is Word, I think, 2007. 10 is essentially the same, and I think 2003 is pretty much the same as well. So you see across the top, one of our options is Review. Now, there are a couple of things you should be with which you should be familiar with Review. One is if you are editing something and you want to be able to track your changes, to mark them as you make them, you can turn on Track Changes. Sometimes someone has done that and doesn't realize it, and then you can say View Changes, and then you can see what they didn't intend you to see, but we'll leave that for another. But what we're and here is how you go through your changes. But this is what we're looking at, Compare. So you click on that, and it says either Compare or Combine. Combine is when you have two different versions and you can mesh them, but we're going to look at Compare. So we have Original Document. In this case, our original document, as I go to this directory, was the Hipster Marketing License Agreement .doc, right? And so let's pick one of your, I did this prior, but let's, so the Hipster, Hannah Sean Victor Hipster Marketing License Agreement, okay. Now, one or both of these compared documents contain track changes. So apparently, when the team was making the changes, it marked them. Well, we're going to say those were accepted, but then it'll show us the comparison. All right, so you get a lot of mess here. This is this sort of tells you all of them. This gets a little bit messy. We don't really necessarily need the original and the revised there. And we don't necessarily need to see where it says reviewing pane, show markup. We can get rid of formatting. It just makes it a little bit easier. So what you're seeing here, what's under... I don't know. Yeah, really. See what happens as soon as they stop... As soon as they stop supporting Windows XP, that's it. The machines get... I really should probably not put any more USB drives in this machine. Anyway, what... Hold on a second. Where is it? What am I looking for? Is it not on this one? This doesn't have... What do you use? It's been so long. Is it Alt F3 for a screenshot? Control... Ah, there it is. Thank you. Hold on a second. I want to show this to them Thank you. Actually, did I capture the? I have no idea. Yeah, I did. Okay, good. Okay. Sorry. Okay, sorry, let's see if it pops up again. Generally speaking, what you see, the way this is set up anyway, the additions are underlined and in blue. Deletions are crossed out. You can also see here, slight formatting. Not quite sure why this was crossed out, because it looks exactly the same. Quote, parens, comma, maybe that was a period, that's why. So again, you have to look at this as it is. It's more accurate to mark as you write, but if you're going through it, you could also do things like this, accept or reject the change, right? So let's say I wanted to reject this change, go back to what it was. See, I can undo all those changes, but we're going to get rid of this. No. Okay, so. Okay, let's start with here. Hannah, Sean, Victor. We have a representative. Tell us, Sean. Tell us about your client.
Our client is...
Well, tell us about...
the equivalent of what EA Sports would be. It's more of a... We were acting as a middleman.
Why don't we start with... What is EA Sports?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we're more of a middleman in the video game world in between the distributor and the smaller company making the product. And the idea was to... the exchange... essentially is we give them notoriety, pimps their products, they can use, they can put their logo next to ours, they can use our connections and through us, but in return we get a good product, we save costs because we didn't have to actually develop the game, develop the software, it's already done, we get to test it and feel, and EA Sports is a company that they make the majority of sports games in the world. So even though this isn't sports, it's...
Well, of course, you also have EA Mobile. I think what you're... Well, no, you say EA Sports makes the majority.
Yeah.
But here... Right, the idea, I guess, is you basically have a video game marketing company.
Yes, that,
right?
More so that.
So you have you have Hipster, the developer of this game, that even though Hipster is tied to a rather large company, right? We have the facts that Hipster is wholly owned by Fogey, financial and technology enhanced financial services. So Fogey is not in this marketplace. I should add, by the way, and I think I had mentioned this to you, that this hypothetical, not the Hipster and the video game part, but this is very much the way that Juno Online Services was created. D.E. Shaw Hedge Fund. David Shaw, the D.E. and D.E. Shaw, decided that he wanted to get into the advertising-supported free email business. It was totally not in his company's area. So he spun off this, well, it was a wholly owned sub, but it was essentially a standalone business funded by D.E. Shaw, but going after an entire different market. And like our hypothetical, Juno did not have an established relationship to get software into people's hands because its parent company was a financial services company. That's what I liked about that as a model is it really says that the developers need a channel. So sometimes it's an unrelated type of business or retailer. Here what we have is the model of a video game marketer that rather than paying developers, it goes out and finds smaller companies with talented developers, good products, but needing someone to help them get to market. If you think about that, what other kinds of businesses have we talked about where you may have small IP owners seeking to get their products to a larger market through a license? What about technology transfer in academia? Right? You have, whether it's biotech, computer science, you have the entire tech transfer office at Stony Brook, whose mission it is to say, we have this IP, we have these inventions, we have these creations, we're looking for companies to license from us and manufacture and sell. And so, different context, clearly, but some of the same issues. Okay, so your company is the video game marketer. So it's doing a deal with the developer and offering it access to the channel, right? So what were some of the concerns, the issues, the priorities for your client before we go into how you mark this up?
There was a testing paragraph, and we thought that was important because our reputation is on the line, our name is on the line. So if we're going to allow this company to put their logo next to ours in advertising, we thought it was important for at least to have some kind of testing procedure.
Now hold on a second. You're saying put its logo next to yours.
Yeah.
But these are your customers, right? So it's not, am I understanding correctly that your client, it's not simply a co-branding exercise, right? It's your client's brand that's primary here. So it's not just the, yes, testing is clearly important, but the reason it's important is you're selling the product, which means that where will customers look if there's a problem or if there's infringement or anything else? They'll look to your client. And so I think just in describing it, it's important to broaden beyond simply brand next to brand. That's irrelevant, right? Who cares what their brand is? The key here is your customers, your brand. And so if you're selling someone else's product as your own, which is, I guess, or at least, right, then you need to be very sure that the quality of that product is sufficient for your reputation. which is sort of what you were saying, but I just want you to think about how you're describing it. Because it's not about brand, their brand, it's about your brand.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
In addition to that, we were focused on damages that we can get. So the agreement originally had no consequential, no incidental, all that. But in the same vein as what I just said, because it's our name at risk and our company, we thought that we should be able to retain consequential damages, incidental damages, and it may be a provision that may not be accepted on the other side, but we figured we'd give it a shot because it is our name and customer base.
Okay, so let's see the things. Let me just get rid of the... let's make this a little bit bigger. Okay, so let's just quickly go through this. So you've put in so you've incorporated the exhibits as part of the definition of the agreement. Good. Okay, we have. Okay, so your client is called Gamebox Distributor. Fine. Okay. Okay. let's just see here. What do we change here? So you rather than say the computer program, you just change it to massively multiplayer online role playing. Okay. Hipster wishes. Why did you add the word recitals?
I added that.
It's not
the
wrong.
Proper way to.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's okay. Because their lawyer was apparently lazy. Okay, that works. Okay. Hipster wishes to grant distributor the right and license to offer the computer program in conjunction with the offering of distributor's products to its customers. Okay. So we have a little language of consideration. Good. Okay. So let's see. Okay, what were we trying to do here? Because it didn't end up... Revision shall mean changes or additions to the hipster software. Hipster software is what? How is that different from computer program? We already have a definition, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was hipster software different from computer program?
Program. Then I think packaging was the actual outer, like the box that the software is going to come in. And then they define hipster product as both of them combined.
Okay, so, and then, but you added another definition of computer program.
That,
how is that different from? Okay, well, let's see, because it seems that they may be an unnecessary addition. So what were we going for here? Changes or addition to the hipster software made by hipster or fogey that in the parties...
That was a mistake. It should read that the parties determines a hipster solely.
What was your concern?
That both of the parties have a say in terms of the provisions.
Okay. Okay, so if they make changes, you want to be involved in making changes. Okay.
Yeah, or at least know about the changes.
Okay, so that should be, all right, let's see. Okay, the product, the inserts, the displays, okay. Okay, what do we do here?
It's very redundant.
Yeah.
Repeating itself, just using the language.
Oh, let me show you something nice. So we have this markup, right? Kind of hard to read. So you just say right up here where it says final and final showing markup. If you just go to final,
mm-hmm.
It gets rid of all the messy stuff. We're still in the marked version.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it makes it easier to see, okay?
It really just cleaned it up. It was a very dense paragraph.
Okay. So wait, so before the delivery dates, use commercially reasonable efforts to deliver the number of copies set forth in Exhibit A to distributor, to entertainment retailer, or to other retailer. So what is that doing? What was your... Was that different from how it was originally? Let's see what the original was. Okay. Okay, so...
Just made it more concise.
I think the idea of the original was that there may be three different delivery dates for the different pieces. Right, but okay, so you weren't substantively changing here.
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
very thick.
Well, I guess from their point, why would they want the packaging prior to the software?
Right, mm-hmm. We would want the whole product.
Well, it may be, but again, it may be because it's being distributed to someone who may need to get it put into machinery or label it in some way or verify it. But it's the same general issue. Okay. You've defined parties, right? Okay. Hipster shall. Okay, so this is a good catch. So if there's errors, you've said, rather than hipster shall be under no obligation to correct such errors, you've said shall correct such errors within 20 days of distributor's submission. Okay, good. All right, nothing here. So this is all about marketing rights and duties. Did you put in any obligations on the part of Hipster with regard to your branding if they're putting together the packaging? You might want to consider doing that, depending on who's doing what. Again, if they're producing packaging for you, because that's what it seems, then you're going to want them to have control over your brand and make sure they're using it properly, etc. And generally, if you're doing something like that that's mutual, it should go over fairly well. Okay, so you've added worldwide. Okay.
Because it mentioned a lot of international.
Good. Copy and distribute. Okay. All right, so distributors shall be entitled to special, direct, indirect, incidental, and consequential damages, including lost profits. And then distributor agrees shall be without, all right, so you've cut away some of their liability. Okay, let me just say a quick word, if I may, about, not about this choice, but about what these generally are. Right. Direct damages are things for which you would get, your client would get indemnification. It cost us X dollars. Here's the invoice, here's the judgment. This was the actual cost to us. So therefore, those are direct damages. And generally speaking, especially if you have an indemnification provision, you don't want to carve out, so that's fine. But when you come to other sorts of things, incidental, consequential, special, indirect, those are all hypotheticals. Lost profits, opportunity costs, those kinds of things. If you're trying to argue, and we'll get into negotiation next class, but if you're trying to argue against them being applied to your client, the argument is, we're comfortable reimbursing you for demonstrated losses, but beyond that, I can't say anything about your lost profits, not under my control, special, incidental. Let's just focus on this, right? Now here you're trying to get, shall be entitled to everything, which I'm not sure you would word it that way. It's not a bad thing to ask for, but understand that at the end of the day, the one that's usually more acceptable would be the direct damages, and everything else, it may be significant, but it's harder to argue for. Now, why is it, right? Why is it that Hipster would want to have limited its liability or kept partners, controlling persons, etc., out of the mix here? Right? You're correct. It's a good call to take it out. Why did Hipster want it there? Anybody else? Why? Think about our fact pattern. Or think about Juno and D.E. Shaw. Why would the brand new subsidiary want to limit its exposure, right? The exposure of, oh, I don't know, the rather deep-pocketed parent company. Think about that. If you're Hipster, you absolutely want to limit just to however this new company is capitalized, and not to the big financial services firm that's behind it. Similarly, if there's a claim against, right, but also you have possible individuals who may be the funders. So you're right to take this out, but understand where the pushback's going to be. Okay? So we have a limited, hipster's limit shall not exceed $10 million instead of the amount paid to distributor. The amount paid is frequently there. You're going to have to justify where the $10
million. But the cap was, I think, they said an estimated $10 million profits. So I think that's why we picked that.
Okay.
Based on the facts.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's really the only number we have to deal
with. Or you could just not limit it and see if you can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All right, so we have a one-year term. Now, why? I'm sorry?
Should you always put a basement in, though? Or just don't put, or not speak to it?
Depends. Who's more likely to get sued here? If your client's the one who's more likely to get sued, you want to limit it. If your client's the one who's likely to be sued, right? Or rather, if your client's more likely to be sued by a third party and you're looking for an indemnification, you want to make sure that you're completely covered. If you're going to be indemnifying, you want to cover, as between the two parties, you want to cap your exposure, right? It's really going to depend, but you need to watch out for that limit on liability. But I will point out one other thing. So, and this gets into, you know, so let's think about this for a second, though. If your client is depending, you've said, okay, we've added indirect and indirect and special and consequential damages up to $10 million. Is that realistic? Is that a number that's likely to be available? Anytime you're dealing, your client is depending on the financial resources of the other party for its risk management. You have to think, what are those financial resources actually going to be? How much money is in Hipster? Will it be $10 million? Will it be 36 cents? Right? You can ask for all you want, but if it's not there, it's not going to help you. So when you're thinking this through strategically as well as the language, you want to think about what kind of money is going to actually be there that we can depend upon. All right, so you've taken out termination for 30 days. Makes sense, right? You're gearing up. Good, okay. Designated subscriber. Okay. The whole idea there is, if you're, now, in your model, right, how are you getting paid?
I mean, it listed payment in an exhibit, so we didn't have...
Right. What is that talking about, a designated subscriber? What's the model that this base contract seems to suggest? Which may make more sense for some of the other business issues, right? The idea of this kind of an arrangement.
Well, it's the people that play the video game.
Right. So if it's truly a distribution agreement, the idea is the distributor is providing access to customers who either would otherwise not be have access to this game, would not get in there, or at least it's that distributor that got to them first. And so the distributor wants credit for the customers it brings even after the agreement. So it gets, again, not necessarily your model. And it may be that this wasn't appropriate at all in your model. I recognize timing. But just thinking about it. And we'll see what other law firms have done. But let's say it's 1 week before the end, and the distributor gets the disc into the hands of 100,000 customers. Termination of the agreement, no more new deal, but those 100,000 represent revenues from its efforts. And so it makes sense for a distributor in that kind of relationship to still get some money after the day-to-day relationship ends. The way you've described it, it may not make sense at all, right? Ultimately, if you're talking about an EA kind of agreement where your company is handling essentially everything, right? It may in fact be either you're paying them outright a one-time fee, or you're giving them a royalty, but you're getting the revenue. Right? In other circumstances, it's Hipster that would be getting paid, right? If Hipster's got the game going, here it seems you're saying you're running the game that Hipster developed. It's a slightly different model. Okay, you've got some exclusivity. We'll see if that, well, this is electronic mail services. This isn't an electronic mail contract. Yeah. So it's there. Why is it there? Probably because I left it there for you to catch. Right? That was, but understand, that's there because whoever drafted this agreement, counsel the Hipster, pulled some agreement out of the hat, forgot to change anything. That's where you get some good points, right? You say, why was this here? And then the other lawyer has to embarrassingly say, I left it in the precedent, and then you sort of get some points that you can use. But in any event, okay. All right, so let's see. So distributor represents, okay. So if you're creating intellectual property, you've left that in, that your rep on your IP, okay. Where are the you did not put in, you did deal with this one. You're getting intellectual property from Hipster. Where is the IP warranty from Hipster? You're distributing its IP under your name. Shouldn't you, if you're actually, because you did deal with this.
Hipster hereby represents, right there.
Right, as the rights to license. It doesn't even say that there will be no infringement. You volunteered that, you've left it in, but you haven't asked for it. In fact, if anything, it's entire. Given how you structured this, think about it, right? Your brand, their IP, you want to make darn sure that they own their IP, that there's no infringement.
That's what we were going for, I guess.
Well, it didn't end up there. Okay, so you're indemnifying them. Okay, so we see you know why this matters? You know why this matters? To get the warranties right? Because the only thing that each party is indemnifying, is paying back, covering the costs for the other party, arise out of breaches of warranty. So if you get the warranties wrong, you don't extend the warranties enough, and I don't mean you personally, but I mean if that's why you have to read this very carefully. Because not only are the warranties sort of standalone promises, if you don't get enough of a warranty, you've not given yourself enough of an indemnity either. And if you've limited their liability to certain things, you can't go outside the contract necessarily. Okay? You're both local, so you don't have to worry about venue. Good. All right, good. I think that was a solid. Anybody have any questions or thoughts? All right, good. Thank you, team. Okay. Collister, Hilpert, and Valley. Someone going to volunteer for that team? No. Well, do we have any spokesmodel, a person? All right, hold on a second. Well, let's before we look at this, tell us about your client.
It's settled on a client who's basically a distributor of
Best Buy and GameStop are not distributors. They're retailers. Right? It's a difference. A distributor, no, it's an important difference. To whom does a distributor distribute? To retailers. To whom do Best Buy and GameStop distribute? Consumers. So the retail versus wholesale model, very different. So in your mindset, just so as we're reading it, your client was a retailer.
Correct.
Okay. So you're obtaining this to retail. But you want the people who buy it from your company, your store, as opposed to from others, you want credit for those customers beyond simply the purchase price, if there is any purchase price, right? The whole idea here is there may not be a purchase price. Was there a purchase price in your model?
I don't think we wrote anything down.
In your mindset, were you thinking of this free discs at the point of sale, at the register, or were you thinking of on the shelf with a purchase price?
Absolutely
on the shelf. Well, okay, so that's not necessarily the only model, right? Certainly with Juno, the way this was working, and they were working with retailers, was here's a disc. You want a free disc? But it was a free disc that was credited, tagged in some way to the retailer. And the revenue that came out of that person using that disc would be credited in some way to the retailer. So what you're talking about is buying it wholesale, right? And then selling it at retail. So in your model, how was your company? Was it simply the difference? Or were you getting revenue going forward?
Well, we tried to limit our exposure to marketing costs so we can maximize our revenue from sales. So we didn't
we were just getting the difference between holes and all that kind of stuff. Our sale price from our first person.
So how does that, just again, understanding, why does it matter then? Why would you get a license agreement in that context? Why would you, you know, what's the licensing piece of a retail relationship?
Certainly, we do any advertisements on our own, let's say for, you know, games and stock, we may show images of certain.
Okay. So it's essentially collateral material licenses.
Yeah, yep.
Okay,
yeah,
as opposed to embedding it in other software that you're selling.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your biggest concern? Since this was very much an arm's length, point, you know, customers decided to buy it from you, maybe your advertising. What was your biggest worry about exposure? Okay. Now, before we look, I do want to ask, and we may have had other retailers in the room, did you think at all about the opportunities to advertise within the game? Remember, and if this wasn't, if you're not familiar with this context, that's understandable, but think about it. Think about it. These are virtual worlds, right? And the virtual worlds can have virtual billboards and virtual storefronts. And so even if what you're talking about is being a retailer, this particular type of product offers the opportunity for a more in-depth relationship where you can potentially generate either advertising benefit, or they can establish a virtual storefront for you and share the revenue that way. I'm not saying you had time to do that, but one of the fun bits about being a lawyer, yes, there are a few, but one of the fun bits about being a lawyer, especially if you really take the time to understand the subject matter beyond the law, is you might actually get an opportunity to suggest something like that to your client. Your client comes to you and says, you know, I'm a retailer, and could you just look over this retail relationship agreement? Say, oh, it's a virtual world. It's an online, massively multiplayer online role-playing game. Do you guys think about advertising possibilities in it? You know, it's not a bad idea. We hadn't thought about that because we're just used to widgets. But now you can start thinking creatively. And maybe you can balance some of your wholesale cost against, or some of the advertising dollars, or find some other opportunities. thinking creatively about the business relationship, not to renegotiate it. That sucks. You sometimes have to do that because your client forgot stuff. But to be constructive, to help them think beyond what they originally thought, that's where it's fun, and that's where you're adding value to your client. So just in thinking about that possibility. So let's see. All right. Okay, let's... So we changed it to a copyright and trademark agreement. Yes?
It should say license on there.
Okay, it doesn't.
We wanted to finally upgrade trademark.
Okay. The IP rights has... Well, I would also like to know what you're doing. What do you need? What rights do you need as a retailer? What license rights does Best Buy have in Microsoft Office? Not a whole lot. Maybe with a game they're going to want screenshots if they want to put the advertising in. But ultimately, it's a widget. It's a box. It's got a SKU. Right? It gets shelved. It gets scanned. It gets sold. You know, you're dealing with return rights. That's why thinking about a retailer, I'm not sure that would set yourself up as easy as it could have been, as straightforward as this could have been. Choosing that path made this a hell of a lot more complicated. You know, when you're given freedom, don't make it harder on yourself. You can get lots of education without confusing things.
The thoughts are behind that as far as, you know, we'll advertise online, there will be images of that online.
Fair enough.
Leaflet, there'll be leaflet mails going.
Right. Now, you may not need a license for the packaging, for the brand, for the... We're selling this. Generally, under trademark, to simply display your wares, you don't need a license. But if you're talking about screenshots, or you're talking about setting up displays in the store... Not only with images, but it may be with looped video. Or, especially if you think about, not so much this context, but if you see often mobile devices that are out for display, either they don't work at all, which is useless, or they've got a specific demo thing that hopefully customers can't figure out their way around, so they can see it without messing it up. And I say that as someone who, like everybody else in 1984-ish, the first time I saw a Mac, the first thing I did was drag, I don't know, Mac write or whatever, or file to the trash and hit empty trash. Oh, look at that! Which, of course, was, I was, you know, in a computer store deleting stuff off the machine. I didn't know any better. That's why they have these, you know, captured things. So, there may be a specific need for them to develop something for your retail establishment, and then there might be a license issue there. Okay.
That's some of the stuff that we focused on with some in-store displays of characters, using of their...
All right, so let's see. So here you took out the good faith effort, so we have the shall deliver, okay? Right? Testing. Okay, so even as a retailer, you want the right to make sure it works.
I think that was one of the ones that, as a retailer, didn't make much sense to us, but we were trying to work with it.
Fair enough. Right, which is because you set yourself up for this one. Okay, fair enough. But you see where it may not make sense. We have joint, okay. Joint logo. Digital copy of each version. Digital copy of, okay. You're going to have to justify why you need to them why you need electronic versions if you've got retail packaging.
Well, this is more in
what we have to present to them, so we want to have to do with the least cost. We figured to send it a photograph or a digital copy, we have to send a physical copy of it.
Okay, again, this paragraph is more where you're bundling your thing with their thing. Right? If you had your software and you're including their software, you're giving them a copy of yours. It may not, this may just, in your hypothetical, it may just go away. Okay? Okay, you're right. You have this question. What does that mean? Okay, good. Here too, this is if you're making packaging that includes their software, you include their marks. Okay. Fair enough. You made your life difficult. But you understand why this would not be the type of agreement in the ordinary course you would sign as a retailer with someone who's supplying you with goods. There it's basically, we'll pay you this, you'll get us these goods, here's our rights of return. And unless you're doing some sort of a joint development, there are very few IP rights that you're even looking for. So keep that in mind. And I will say, my thought had been, and you could see it here, right, that your client now would be your client in the negotiation.
Yeah, that's what I was
asking. I will waive that for you guys, all right? So think this one through. I'll give you a gimme on this one, and anybody else who hypotheticaled themselves into a corner, right, come up with something else.
Okay.
Because, yeah, that would be a challenge to work out the negotiation. Okay, good. All right. The Jade Deanna Antonia. Who's repping?
So where are they?
All right. So tell us who you are.
We are the equivalent of GameStop. We are a retailer.
Okay. Are you in the same hole they are? The whole that you don't really generally do a marketing license if you're GameStop and are you selling this?
Yes.
Or are you giving it away?
We're selling.
Okay, so you're in the same hole they are.
Yes.
Okay. Notwithstanding that, tell us about where you thought your particular licensing and other issues might most be.
Our main concentration was that we wanted to be able to have an exclusive license for the first month because we knew that that was where the majority of gamers were going to enter the market.
Okay, let's exclusivity first month, fine. License is where I wonder. What did your law firm feel you were being licensed? What was the IP in question if you were a retailer?
The actual gear itself. Yeah.
Okay. Thinking about it, does Best Buy get a license for the retail boxes of software that it sells? Does it need a license? And a license, what kind of license?
Well, they need a license to actually be able to have it in the store and display it there.
No, they don't. No, they don't. It's not a public performance to put something out for retail sale, right? It's a box. You do not need a license to put a retail box on display for sale. You need ownership or you know, some sort of a deal. A license is when you are using, copying, transmitting, modifying, all those on the copyright side, all those exclusive rights. Reselling, because that's what you're doing here. You may remember in the reading, and I'm feeling really guilty. I think it's a good book, and I think there's a lot of value there. I realize we haven't used it much, and I'm sorry for that, because I know it was expensive. Hopefully you can return them if you decide it's not valuable. But anyway, right? You may recall there were some readings about the first sale doctrine. That once something is purchased, the owner of that licensed product or the medium on which the licensed product is permitted to resell it. Resell the ownership rights, the property rights. So here, if you're a retailer, you're buying from the wholesaler or from the product provider, and you're reselling, retailing, right? So, yeah.
Would that change? Because I think we also kind of shopped around with the Kongregate, the online portal where people would come and access the game from our, I guess, our website. If we're selling that, are we still considered a retailer, or are we...
See, that's different from... If you're permitting, if you are directly giving them downloads, then you've got, you need that right. Yeah, sure, then you are redistributing. But if you're simply, if you walk into GameStop, there are cartridge, you know, boxes of discs, and you, and the customer comes up, buys a disc, GameStop purchased those discs most likely at a wholesale price, hopes to sell them at the retail price, profit margin is the difference minus the cost of doing business. And if you're talking about that, that makes a whole lot more sense. Once you're online, once you're distributing the electronic version, you may well need, because there you're not purchasing a box. There you are in fact getting the IP and you are retransmitting it. And you're making a copy and you're keep distributing copies. There you might well need a license in a way that a real world retailer wouldn't. If you, for example, if you buy software, I know I say buy software, buy a license for software, we're shorthand, right? You buy your tax software. I have to find my tax software. You buy your tax software from Amazon.com. You have two choices, at least. One is you may buy the retail version of it. And Amazon will put a box in another box, put a label on it, ship it to you, it comes with a disc. The other alternative is electronic delivery. And there, Amazon is hosting the software. You have a digital library at Amazon. There, they're going to need a copyright license in a way that they will not if they're distributing real world. Yeah?
Could that be why they split up the definitions, the software packaging and both of them?
It could well be. In the original, it's because in some of our deals, Juno was, because that's on which this is based, either they were providing discs to be given out, or they were providing software that was going to be embedded on a music disc or on another software disc where the packaging wasn't coming from here. It would be hipster. So it really depends on how you structure the particular relationship. Okay, so we have pre-order delivery date. You want 7,000 copies. Those would be, I take it, the disc copies.
Right.
Okay, 700,000 copies. All right, so that's your retailer point of sale. You're reselling it, not really a license issue. Also very good. Not really a license context, but a smart business move.
But so we included a pre-order and then I think a post-order to say that we'd be able to come back after the shipment.
Okay, good. So again, you took out the you won't fix it. All right, so this is all the stuff that's...
We didn't get far because unfortunately, you know, we were...
You dug yourself in the same hole.
That and also, this is just such a foreign concept to me. I think you spent most of the time just trying to explore.
Fair enough. Okay, so... I will, again, your group, if you wish to change the model, or at least take away the, I think there's really, this is not the, if you want to talk about the ins and outs of retailing, that's probably more appropriate for the sales class than for here. This is unique. Retailers with physical goods can't do the kinds of things one can do in these contexts. Think about the idea. You buy, and even back before, but you buy a CD at the record store. back in the day. You could still buy CDs. I bought one from Amazon not long ago. It wasn't available. It was the first CD I had bought in probably 10 years. But in any event, you can. And you put the CD in your computer because you're about to rip it and distribute it to your friends. No. And you have the ability to also install good software. There's a little extra room on the disk. And, you know, special bonus, in addition to getting this music, you also get this software. That's kind of cool. That's what this is all about. Right? A value add for the music disc company. That it gives a new channel for the game company. And then you figure out, okay, how do we share the value there? How do we get credit for the customers we send? What about ongoing? Because there may be an ongoing revenues, in-game purchases, or whatever. These kinds of, because you can do things in the virtual world, in the digital world, you can't easily do in the real world. There, not to say there aren't real world equivalents. There are pop-up stores. If you go to Best Buy, for example, there's an Apple place within Best Buy, you know, and there's going to be a Samsung. And those are generally run by, often by employees, not of Best Buy, but of dedicated salespeople sent by Apple or Samsung to stand around in Best Buy and help people with their employers, their companies' products. But that's about as much as you can do in the real world retailer. Or you go to Costco and you're hungry, which is always a good idea, because especially around big holiday seasons, every other aisle, you get somebody cutting up some piece of food to feed you. And often it's not a Costco employee. Sometimes it is. But like my favorite, the David's Cookies Cakes. I love when they're there because they're all kosher and there's plastic, you know, but you get like moose cake and this cake and that cake. It's a David's person. Employed by David's. I did that as a kid once. A couple times. I did food samples at a grocery store. What a horrific job. But anyway, I'm rambling, it's late. So there, that's about as close as you can get. You put your person in another store selling your, and there's some, you know, either you're doing it as a favor to try to boost sales, or you negotiate that if I've got my person doing a demo, my Vitamix person, my Magic Bullet person doing a demo in your store on those days, rather than us getting $10 wholesale for these units, we'll get 15 because we've added to your sales. We're paying somebody to go into Costco or to Best Buy to increase the sales of our products. We would like an additional percentage because once they're there, they're not only going to buy that, they'll buy, you know, the 200 rolls of toilet paper and everything else. Some creative, limited scope. But once you're digital, once you're dealing with intellectual property, once you're dealing with licensing, your clients can be very creative in what they're doing, how they're doing it, how the money gets shared. And that's as true when you're talking about biotech as it is for anything else. So that's why your groups want to shift. Come up with a hypothetical client that's maybe more licensing focused. Has to deal with a license in some way. It's distributing this in a way that does not simply require a box, right? Don't think of the packaging in that way. And don't think of it as you're buying it at wholesale and selling it at retail. It's not at all interesting. And it's not going to give you a lot to work with when you're negotiating. So think of it as free of charge. The customers are not necessarily paying. You guys want to change too, that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to just limit it to them. But the model here is distribution, but not sale. That it's getting access to the channel, and the customer will then generate revenue that gets shared in some way. All right, so we're going to lead this, but I think not, yeah.
So if we were distributing software instead of the actual physical disk, we would have been okay?
I think that, not that you weren't okay here. You made it harder for yourself. You don't need a license to distribute a box with a disk in it. You do need a license if you're distributing a download. Then at least you do need a license. And you're not buying. If you want to say you're an online retailer, if you like the idea of representing a retailer, but your client is distributing digitally, iTunes, Google Play, right? Google Play, you can buy, get all sorts of books and movies. Think about Google Play distributing a movie. It's not that Google is buying a million copies of Frozen. No, it's getting a license to distribute Frozen through the Google Play movie channel and working out a deal with Disney on RevShare. We're charging X, either we'll pay you Y or something else is going on. There you need a license because you're getting one copy and you're distributing it electronically. But you're not selling them. See, there's difference here, right? Yes, yes. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. You know what? I'm not going to exclude you guys. I take it back. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. You can go, it's not always free. You can go into the store and buy Minecraft or World of Warcraft or anything else. And what you're buying is the base software the customer's buying, but that's simply giving the customer access to the world. Then there's a monthly fee. And if you're talking about a monthly, buying the access disk or getting it for free, but there's a monthly fee, then even the retailer has an opportunity for participating on the back end. But the closer you get to, it doesn't matter if it's this store or that store or another store. But the closer you get to it as a widget, where they're paying wholesale for the disc and they're selling it for a retail price, the farther you get away from something that's educational and useful. That's going to be something giving you some meat from which to negotiate. So I would encourage you to think about the hypothetical in a way that's going to give you something fun and good to learn from and to work. It's all hypothetical. There are no real clients here. But if you're going to be negotiating against a real lawyer next week, and it could be me and it could be a guest, maybe I'll just wear a mustache so I don't look like myself. You're going to want to have a licensing deal in mind. And a brick and mortar retailer with a cash register at a box, it's not really a licensing deal. So think about, and look, if you guys collectively decide that you'd rather me give you a fact pattern, I'll give you a fact pattern. I'm just trying to let you be a little bit creative, but if it doesn't work with time and everything else, that's fine. We'll set it up. Just let me know. Okay. And then, one more. Would you like to share it with us? Tell us about your company. Tell us about your client. What is it?
Hipster's the developer, and our company is the distributor.
So yes.
We distribute to large retailers, such as Toys R Us or Best Buy.
Okay, so you're really putting yourself in the distributor model. Okay. What kind of license, if you're... It's essentially the same problem as they have, but perhaps even more so. What kind of license does a distributor of widgets need? Of boxes with disks in them? What were your concerns as the distributor in that sense.
We thought we needed a license agreement to distribute it because we were the basically, I guess, the middleman who's the only ones dealing with the developer.
Okay. Now you might. Not say you wouldn't. When might a distributor need a license, even a real-world distributor? What kinds of things are licenses needed for in copyright or trademark? Right, but to do what with them? To use them, but you're not the user, right? Let's say you're going to a small software developer, and they've got a product sitting on their computers, and you've got to get it onto the shelves of Toys R Us. What's that? What has to happen between the code is now finished and kid picks it off the shelf at Toys R Us? There's an important process that has to happen. What happens between artist finishes singing and person buys it at a record store? Huh? To do what? Not to distribute. Distribution, no. Before that. Yeah. It may well be that as part of your distribution services to the small software company, you're also putting it on disks and making packages and putting the disks in the packages. That if your distribution is that, you know, or like the EA Sports in a sense, or EA, that they are not only marketing to consumers, but they may well be doing all of the things you need to do to take, you know, one copy of software and turn it into millions of copies available. So I don't know if that was what you intended, because if all you're doing is picking up boxes from here and moving them to here, and here is either into a consumer's hand or into a retailer's hand, that's a transportation deal, essentially, or it's a buying and selling, but it doesn't matter what's in the box. There's no license involved. The only license needed is if you are using the IP in some way. You are producing it. You are embedding it in something that you have. Think about, have you guys seen this? I don't know how many of you shop for cereal, or at least probably not the same brands of cereal. Have you ever seen that every once a year or so, Cheerios puts children's books in Cheerios boxes? Have you seen this? They're usually like really top notch. You're smiling. Have you not seen this?
No, I haven't.
They do it once every year or so. You'll see that there are like four different actual children's books. They slide into the Cheerios box. All right. Now, does Cheerios need a license to put that in? Generally speaking, no. But there may still be, if it's a special book, right, a unique, the Cheerios version that instead of saying, you know, good night mush, you're saying good night Cheerios, which really wouldn't rhyme. But otherwise, you're sliding it in the box. And you're moving it from here to here. And maybe you've got something on the back, some artwork for which you might need a license, but it's not major. Yeah, here. See? That book was actually Jump, No T-Rex in the Library. Those are actually in the boxes, which is kind of cool. But it's not really a licensing deal. So, what did you focus on in your distributor relationship? What were the concerns?
Well,
So we have testing.
The delivering.
Okay. But would a pure distributor that's never dealing with the consumers, how much testing would it necessarily be entitled to do? You're thinking about that.
Well, we don't want to be responsible, I guess, for any agreement that we may have with the retailer. So if it's not working properly, we may...
Well, one way is to test it. The other way is to simply say, if you're providing us with a faulty product and we have... That gets more into warranties and indemnification. You promise this is a good product because we're selling it to our retail customers. And if it's not, and they complain, and we have to pay them back and buy it back from them, you're buying it back from us.
Testing could protect your goodwill.
It could. On the other hand, it also puts more of a burden on the wholesaler having blessed it rather than simply saying, you know, the I know nothing, etc. Okay. So... But you sort of got stuck probably with the same thing that everybody else did on the retailer side. There's not a lot of licensing meat.
But the delivery also.
Right. Delivery, absolutely. But understand that in a license agreement, that's almost minimal. The issue here is the intellectual property relationship and the interconnected business relationship going forward. So, with apologies, because perhaps... I might have served you better giving you a little more structure because it would have been easier for you guys to take care of this. I think all of you did a good job of thinking through and where you thought it would, there were relevant changes, making them. I would think we got everybody? Okay. Next class, I want to talk about strategies and choices about negotiation. In this context and otherwise. Some of my externs will have heard some pieces of this, but we're going to talk about how you do what you do and why you do it. And what I would say is, if you think you might want to change your hypothetical, ponder it amongst yourselves by email or otherwise. If you want me to sort of vet it for, yeah, this is going to make your life easier, let me know next class what you might think to change, because I think that if you guys stick with these pure retail or pure distributor, brick and mortar, you're going to be fighting yourselves up. You know, it's an uphill battle just to get something to negotiate about. All right? Have a good night.